I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. The National Emergencies Act was passed by Congress in 1976 and has been used by all the presidents since that time. President Carter used it to sanction Iran in response to the hostage crisis. President Bush used the act after the September 11th terror attacks. President Obama used the NEA a dozen times, mostly to punish foreign countries. President Trump declared a national emergency last week to get funds not authorized by Congress to pay for his wall along the Mexico border. Here's some of what he said while speaking in the White House Rose Garden.
I could do the wall over a longer period of time. I didn't need to do this, but I'd rather do it much faster. And I don't have to do it for the election. I've already done a lot of wall for the election, 2020.
It didn't take long for state attorneys, general, immigration activists, environmentalists, and the House of Representatives to pounce and file suit. What will the courts do, and what does the law say? We asked Stephen Vladeck to join us, and he's a professor of law at the University of Texas Law School. Stephen Vladeck, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
So how does this National Emergencies Act, how does it define what an emergency actually is?
It doesn't. And I think that's one of the most important and awkward things about the statute. Congress, I think, recognizing that it would be somewhat foolhardy to try to anticipate every kind of possible situation that could justify a resort to these special statutory authorities that are unlocked by declaring a national emergency, didn't try to define what an emergency is. Congress just created a series of political and legal checks on the president that haven't really had to work that much over the last 43 years and that haven't been that effective when they've been necessary.
And I'm curious, looking over the last 40 years, has a declaration of emergency by a president ever been challenged the way this one has been?
No, and I think that's part of what's interesting about this case is that, you know, the National Emergencies Act is actually a pretty expansive authority. It gives the president a lot of power to activate over 100 different standby statutes that range on everything from disaster assistance to military construction to financial sanctions. But we've never seen a prior national emergency where the president was, I think, so transparently using the National Emergencies Act as a way to get around the fact that he had asked Congress more specifically for something and had not gotten it. I think that's what's different this time around.
Because Congress supposedly controls the purse strings, right? And this is a kind of a workaround for the president.
Yeah, I mean, I think the separation of powers issue here is murky because on the one hand, Congress, this Congress, did not give the president, you know, anywhere close to the amount of money he had been seeking. On the other hand, Congress in prior statutes has said that when the president declares a national emergency, again, without specifying what that must be, the president can unlock access to, you know, these other pools of money, including, as most relevant here, this military construction pool of money. So, you know, I think it's not quite the sort of a power grab by the president as a matter of his inherent constitutional authority. I think what he's doing is he's taking the older statutes and applying them in a way that they probably were never meant to be applied to get around the fact that the current Congress didn't give him what he wanted.
Let me just quote something from this second law that you just referenced. This is about, quote unquote, I'm reading several different people at the same time here. The White House also invoked a second law. This is from The Guardian that authorized the Secretary of Defense to support the, quote, construction of roads and fences and installation of lighting to block drug smuggling corridors across international boundaries of the United States. So looking at the Defense Department, is there a law that allows the Defense Department to do that?
So there is. I mean, you quoted what Section 1084 of Title 10. There's a separate provision, Section 2808, that allows for the Defense Department to build certain things, but for certain purposes. And I think that's where, you know, the president could run into trouble here. There's no general authority to use military construction funds to do whatever the president wants in a national emergency. Rather, the use of the military construction funds has to be for the use of the armed forces. And, you know, given that we don't usually use the armed forces to patrol our borders, that it's actually Customs and Border Protection, a civilian agency, I actually think that when all these lawsuits, you know, get to the really nub of the matter, it's not going to be the question of whether this really is a national emergency, because courts aren't going to know how to answer that question, given that the statute doesn't define the term. It's going to be about the specific language of these specific authorities, whether the military construction statute really allows the president to take private property along the, say, Texas-Mexico border and build a fence.
So even though, and we played a clip of the president saying essentially, I could do the wall over a longer period of time, both declaring an emergency and then seemingly undeclaring an emergency. You're saying as far as the courts are concerned, that's really a side issue.
Well, I mean, I guess it's not that it's a side issue. It's that it's a harder place to hold the president accountable, right? That is to say, it's easy for all of us to look at what's going on and say, well, this isn't an emergency. The problem is that Congress, for better or for worse, didn't actually define the term. And so I think, you know, the courts, if given a choice between reviewing whether this is really an emergency within the colloquial sense of the term, or looking at the more specific language of the statutes the president's trying to rely upon to see if those fit these circumstances, I think courts are going to lean toward the latter, because I think that's just more consistent with, you know, what courts do. And I think it's also, you know, less likely to tie the hands of future presidents who may confront something we all agree is an emergency, but just not one that Congress could reasonably have contemplated in advance.
Why did Congress pass this law back in 1976? What was the reasoning, or what was the thing that they were reacting to?
Yeah, I mean, one of the ironies is the National Emergencies Act was actually meant to restrain the president. And, you know, today it's being invoked in the other direction. Congress was basically reacting to what had been a very loose practice of declaring national emergencies from World War II, you know, through the end of the 1960s. The idea behind the National Emergencies Act was to regularize the practice, was to require the president to follow certain procedural steps, to give Congress the power for the first time to override and terminate a national emergency. And apparently the House is going to try to set that into motion today. And to sort of basically, you know, make it clearer that a national emergency was a very specific thing that only had specific consequences. I think what Congress did not anticipate in 1976 was that it would become much harder for Congress to terminate a national emergency in the future because of an intervening Supreme Court decision. So when the statute's initially passed, Congress says we can terminate a national emergency anytime we can muster a majority of both houses, whatever the president thinks. But in 1983, the Supreme Court said that kind of legislative veto is actually unconstitutional. So today, Congress actually needs either the president's signature on a bill or veto-proof supermajorities of both houses to override a veto. And I think that's why it's going to be such an uphill battle for Congress to stop this national emergency as opposed to for the courts to do it.
Well, you've got Congress, as you said, the House of Representatives going to do something today. You've got the attorneys general. You've got some people, I think, living along the border. They've got some issues with the wall going up. Who do you think has the strongest case when it comes to a court decision?
And I think the reality is that the folks who are going to have the strongest argument that they should be the ones entitled to challenge this are the property owners who are actually going to see their property either taken or at least built across by the government in order to build the wall. You know, I think some of the states might have a bit of a claim depending upon where the money comes from. And let's keep in mind, I mean, if we're repurposing funds that Congress appropriated for other military construction projects, presumably the folks involved in those projects will have something to complain about if those projects aren't going forward. So, you know, I think we're going to eventually find somebody who is the right person to bring a lawsuit challenging the president's actions. And then I think the focus is going to shift to, you know, whether the courts are going to focus on the question of, is this really an emergency, or whether the courts are going to focus instead on, you know, are the specific authorities the president's using meant to be used the way he's using them?
I mean, it sounds like a collision with eminent domain, right? If someone owns property along the border, that you're saying that they might have more standing than, say, the House of Representatives?
Or at least clearer standing. I mean, so the tricky thing about the House of Representatives having standing is, you know, we don't usually allow institutions to sue because of injuries to their representatives. The question is there some specific injury to the institution as such? It's also part of why it's odd that, you know, you have states not along the border that are part of this lawsuit challenging the emergency. On the other hand, a property owner whose property is going to be taken has, I think, an unquestionable injury and is a very sympathetic plaintiff in this context, regardless of what you think the right answer is to the lawsuits on the merits.
So do you imagine this then dragging on for weeks, months, years as the courts try to sort this out?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I think, you know, here in Texas, we're still litigating over the Secure Fences Act, which was passed back in 2006. So, you know, I think this is going to take longer than it's going to take, it's going to take years more than it's going to take weeks. And I think the real question is going to be just how much the administration pushes the issue, or whether this is really just about the optics of being able to say the president did it, and that, you know, they're not going to fight that hard if they start losing in court. That's really going to drive how long this takes, where we are. You know, are we even settled by the time we get to the 2020 election cycle?
So does that mean then that the money does not go to expanding on the wall along the U.S.-Mexico border until the court decides that money is essentially held in abeyance?
So it depends. I mean, the tricky part is that the president's allowed to act until a court stops him. Now, some of the plaintiffs in some of these cases are seeking what's called an injunction. They're basically asking the courts to stop the president from taking steps toward building the wall and using these funds. It remains to be seen whether courts are actually going to issue injunctions in these cases that will stop the president from acting while the litigation unfolds or not. And one of the big issues, one of the big questions courts look at in that context is, what is the plaintiff's likelihood of success on the merits once we're done litigating this case? So I think, you know, how strong the claims are, which plaintiffs get there first, is going to have a lot to say about what the status quo is going to be while these cases make their way through the courts.
Do you think Congress will begin to rewrite the National Emergencies Act based on what has happened in the last week?
It would sure be nice. I mean, I think one of the things that I hope folks take away from the Trump administration, whatever you think of the president, I think we're seeing a lot of examples of places where Congress has delegated probably more power to the executive branch than we actually would like. And so one of the questions is, how might you reform the National Emergencies Act? I think one proposal Congress ought to take very seriously is have national emergencies sunset, so that the president can't just, you know, declare a national emergency and have it go on in perpetuity. Basically, if Congress said a national emergency expires in, say, 30 or 60 days, unless we, Congress, formally pass a statute to approve it, I think that would have a lot of – that would exert a lot of pressure on future presidents to not use the National Emergencies Act the way the president is here.
In fact, aren't there emergencies that have been declared decades ago that are still in effect?
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I think most of those are not controversial. I mean, so, for example, there are still national emergencies in place with regard to Iranian sanctions. There's still a national emergency in place with regard to the terrorist attacks on September 11th. We just don't hear about those because those don't feel to us like an abuse of the National Emergencies Act. That's actually why we think Congress passed this regime. And I think, I for one, don't worry that in a world in which the emergency expired every so often, Congress would reauthorize it if it were important enough. But the problem with the lack of a sunset under the current statute is that if the president does what President Trump has done here, which is declare a national emergency that it's quite possible a majority of both houses of Congress don't agree with, There's no mechanism for the majorities in both houses to stop the national emergency unless they can get to a veto-proof supermajority. And at least these days, it's very hard to imagine a veto-proof supermajority in Congress agreeing to anything.
Well, Stephen Vladeck, thanks for explaining this all. Very complicated, but explaining all this to us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. That's Stephen Vladeck. He's a professor of law at the University of Texas Law School, talking about the National Emergencies Act. After this very short break, we'll be talking about Plessy v. Ferguson, the story behind that Supreme Court decision. Do stay with us. We'll be right back.